Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
David Coleman has just popped into studio. You're very welcome. Good to see you here.
Good morning.
Now for something completely different,
now
as
for
they
something
say.
Completely different. Although I'm looking at Paddy's vinyl album there. It's like so cool to have vinyl back.
Yeah, well, we're talking, you know, about parenting problems. Paddy's running out of studio now, but he might want to talk to you about that new baby and,
we had a quick chat
Did
actually
you have,
before.
You gave him a bit,
just before
a bit
he came in, yeah. Actually, what he pointed out, which I think is so relevant, is it's all about having a supportive partner.
It certainly is.
As I was chatting to my own wife coming in, and she's like, yeah, I've just reviewed your article now for Wednesday's Independent. I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, right. She proofreads your articles.
Yeah, well, she's a psychologist as well, so it's just fantastic. It just means I never get things horrendously wrong.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, it's brilliant.
David Coleman needs help too. All is well.
Lots of help.
Listen, let's start with some questions that people have sent in, because as always, people send them in advance. But if you're listening and you have a question for David, 51551 is the text number, or you can email us todaycb@rte.ie. Now, let's listen to this one. What can I do when my granddaughter tells me that her mother, my daughter, is drinking too much and is causing my granddaughter to have anxiety? She's not yet a teenager. She's asked me not to say anything to my daughter for fear of getting into trouble. Her daddy doesn't live with them. He drinks also. I have reassured my granddaughter that I will do something about it. Please advise. So she said, I'll do something, David. What does she do?
Well, it's really difficult. I mean, it's great that her granddaughter has confided in her, because it sounds like her granddaughter is upset or distressed or anxious or whatever, worried at the very least about the situation. And feels she can chat to her granny about it, which is brilliant. I guess the one thing that I wonder whether the granny has reassured her that she won't talk to her mum. Mm-hmm. And or maybe promised her that she won't talk to her mum. And that's potentially the only really difficult bit. I think it's so hard. I know certainly the work I do, you know, whenever I'm starting to talk with young people or children, you know, I try and explain to them that there are certain things that they might talk to me about that actually I'll have to break my promise to them that I won't talk about it outside the session, because some things do need to be talked about. And that'd be a very typical example where perhaps her granddaughter is at risk because of the mum's behaviour. And so she really needs to have, I suppose, the permission, if permission is the right word, from her granddaughter, but she needs to feel confident she can talk to her own daughter about what's happening, because that's really the only way this is going to resolve. Because whatever about the daughter's drinking that may or may not be problematic, you know, I think a conversation with her about what's happening and about what it is that her daughter, her, you know, so the granddaughter is concerned about, is just going to be potentially something that can easily sort it out. Because
it sounds like you're more concerned about the impact that this is having on the granddaughter and whether she is at risk in that situation.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, you
in
know,
the first
it doesn't,
instance.
Yeah, she doesn't necessarily, she's not that she's at grave physical risk or emotional risk, but she's worried enough about the way her mum is behaving in terms of her drinking behaviour that she's telling her granny about it. And so that does need to be responded to. And so it may be that the mum, that her drinking is not necessarily problematic, but it's just problematic for her own daughter. And so that's something that, you know, she's given the information about, look, this is what you're doing, this is how it impacts your own daughter, this is what worries her, then that's something very potentially easy for the mum to go, oh, okay, I hadn't realised the impact I was having on my own daughter. That's good feedback to have. Now I can change. And I suppose that's how we want to approach these things always, is with the assumption that if we give the person who's, you know, has the potentially problematic behaviour the information, they might want to or be able to do something about it. They might not either. She might be very defensive and all that kind of stuff. But I suppose you deal with that down the line if that's what happens. But the first thing is to feel confident to be at least able to talk to the mum in this case, and on behalf of the granddaughter, because obviously the granddaughter doesn't feel confident to talk to her own mum directly about it. But so, it's going to be very difficult otherwise for the granny to actually support her. I mean, you know, if the granny has said as well to her granddaughter, look, you know, I will help you. I mean, this is really the only way that she can help her.
So she needs to find a way to talk to her own daughter.
Yeah, just to, and to let the granddaughter know that that's going to be the next step, and that, you know, if that causes, for example, I suppose the worry from the daughter's point of view or the granddaughter's point of view is that that'll cause mommy to get cross, you know, that she's talking out of turn or telling secrets from the house or all that kind of stuff that kids worry about. And so what the granny needs to be able to reassure her is that no matter what happens and no matter what your mum's reaction is, I'll still be here to support you. So you and me will be able to continue to help sort things out. And so that means that the granny remains, if you like, a refuge or a place of safety for that granddaughter.
Okay, let's now move on to the next one. And this is about a girl who's feeling down. Hi, David. My 11-year-old daughter is feeling very down. It's going on at least 6 months. She says she feels very sad all the time and she's crying a lot. She said she doesn't see the point in life. She's also recently been diagnosed with dyslexia and she's struggling with that. She has a group of friends, but she's not that fond of them. She says that they're mean to her. This was going on all last year too, and I did speak to the teacher a few times about it. Can you please give any advice? So there's a good bit going on in that message, David.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so in many ways, then it makes good sense almost for her daughter to be, feeling a bit crappy about life, because it sounds like life is actually a bit crappy for her. She has this long-standing issue with the friends, which isn't improving. And so she feels a little bit on the edge of that, or almost like she just doesn't want to engage in it because perhaps, you know, it's been so difficult over the last year or so. And then she's been diagnosed with dyslexia. And so while on the one hand, that might have been a relief to understand that there is something that explains the struggles she might have been having academically in school, it might also now for her feel like it puts her again, you know, in this position of being different to her peers, different again to this group of girls that she was having the issue with. And so it could feel like everything is coming on top of her just right now. So I think a lot of listening and support in relation to the impact of the dyslexia and you know, the friends, perhaps then maybe some reassurance and some support directly from the school and from others to show that now knowing about dyslexia is actually a really good thing, because now things can get easier in school. And then depending on the issue with the friends, it might be something that the mum, you know, does actually need to get involved with regard to maybe talking to some of the other parents if there's an issue that she's been kind of left to the side of the group or whatever it is.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
It's very tricky, but, you know, and that's why there's no, you know, kind of one size fits all when it comes to kind of dealing with friendship issues, because not every issue is going to be one that you're going to be approaching, for example, a parent with. Not every issue is one that you're going to be going to a school with. Not every issue is one that's actually even resolvable, because of course, you know, kids can fall out of favour with each other. They just might stop liking each other and they might be offended or hurt.
And so, a lot of times you need to, I think, stay out of that as a parent. But when it gets to this point where it's been running for a long time,
yeah,
and your daughter is very sad for a long time, you kind of have to step in, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, and so the way the daughter's talking about it, you know, wondering what's the point and feeling like I can't remember at the start, did she say that she felt like she couldn't go on?
She said she doesn't see the point in life, which I think is probably the most worrying part of that entire message. And I wondered when I read that, is that the point where you say, right, we need some professional help here?
That's exactly the point I was going to come to, that I think, you know, however else you might respond to the dyslexia and the friends, you also have to hear the fact that her daughter is that distressed by whatever's going on, and that it might be just a little bit beyond you as a parent to support her. And so, I mean, there are lots of public services there, you know, child and adolescent mental health services for one, but I mean, almost everyone will tell you the waiting lists are ridiculous and you mightn't even get an appointment. And so it then might be about looking for a private appointment, which can also be somewhat scarce depending on where you are in the country, but at least that potential is there, because I think somebody else outside the family may also be able to reassure your daughter in a way that you can't in relation to some of the stuff. Because, you know, for example, your daughter will tell you, you know, oh, you're my mammy, you'd have to say that, which is a very common thing, whereas when somebody outside the family says, well, actually, you know, you having dyslexia shows that you are smart, because you have to have at least average, if not above average, intelligence in order to get a diagnostic, you know, to fall into the diagnostic criteria of having dyslexia. So kids with dyslexia are smart kids. They just have this very specific difficulty with regard to the reading, the writing, the spelling, or the numeracy, depending on what it is. So, so some outside help might well help them. But I'd definitely be listening to the fact that this all feels like it's too much for your daughter just right now. It doesn't sound like it's kind of panic stations too much, that the, you know, but there's no harm as well in checking with even an 11-year-old. You can say, well, I wonder, you know, if you feel like, you know, that there's, what exactly was the phrase again she said at the start? Sorry, I don't
but
have
there's,
the...
there's no, I feel she doesn't see the point in life.
Doesn't see the point in life. And say, so if you haven't seen the point in life, I wonder, have you ever thought about killing yourself? And you can say that to an 11-year-old without increasing the risk of suicide. If anything, you reduce the risk, because what you do now is you put it out on the table that you're willing to talk about.
I just think when you
this.
Say that, most parents would be terrified to use those words.
They are, but then they're probably terrified at the thought of somebody like that potentially being suicidal or thinking about suicide or maybe having some plan or having thought about what they might do. Whereas when you begin the conversation, and so you begin by saying, I wonder if you've ever thought about killing yourself. And if they say, well, I've thought about it, you say, okay, well, tell me, what have you thought about? Or you know, and so then you can even begin to inquire a little bit as to what kinds of things she has thought about, or has she ever thought about taking any kind of action? Or,
but what do you do then? And if you get that response, yes, I have thought about it.
Then you're in a, so again, this sounds the wrong way to put it, but you're in a much stronger position with regard to a child and adolescent mental health referral. So you go to your GP straight away that afternoon, for example, and you say, you know, my daughter is actively thinking about harming herself or killing herself. We've had a conversation this morning. This is an emergency referral we want now to the child and adolescent mental health service. And again, depending on where you are in the country, sometimes that means you'll get an appointment within a number of days. Sometimes it can still be a little bit longer than that.
Okay. Let's move to a different age group now for our last one. David, how do we stop one toddler from hitting their cousin who's also the same age? It happens when they're together, unprovoked, and at preschool also. Look, can I answer this one?
Go for it, Claire. Absolutely, I'd be delighted to.
It happens.
It does.
A lot sometimes.
It does.
And then it passes.
Typically,
most of the time,
right? For most of the time, it is just it's a phase, and oftentimes, I think if it's a cousin, you know, there might be a little bit of competition in there and a sense of, you know, kind of that one child gets more or whatever. But I think, you know, the main thing with hitting is that you have to be very present, so you have to see it happening, and then you have to separate the two toddlers. You have to say no hitting, you know, and so if you can't play without hitting that, you're going to have to come over here with me, and you're not going to be let play with your cousin and whatever. And so it's that consistent, firm response all the time. No hitting. Hitting is not allowed. We don't allow hitting. And that you're physically present enough that you can intervene to stop it, so that they learn as well that actually it isn't going to be allowed. I think that's the big thing. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we just say, oh, don't hit your cousin, you know, but we don't really do anything about it. You know, so it's just like voice and, you know,
yeah,
for a child, they're going to ignore that.
Meaningless
so
words.
You have to be
your toddler.
You have to be a bit interventionist. You have to actually physically move them apart. You have to make sure that you know, one toddler can't hit the other physically because they're just too separate. You know, there's too much distance between them, that you're there and that you're watching it. And so it does, as you say, fade typically over time.
Yeah, you hope.
Well, look, we hope about a lot of things in parenting. If we didn't have hope, japers, where would we all be?
Right, well, David, you're going to be back with us again. And as always, we invite people to get in touch with those questions, because it's good if you do it now. You might have a little bit of time to think about it and compose something. And the email address is todaycb@rte.ie. And David, we will see you again very soon. Thank you very much for coming back in.